outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Finally, I got my letter to join the Illuminati.
You got an actual letter to join the Illuminati?
Well, let's say it was an email, okay? Greetings from the Illuminati, world elite empire, bringing the poor, the needy, and the talented to the limelight of fames, riches, powers, and securities. Get recognized in your business, political race, rise to the top, whatever you do. Be protected spiritually and physically. All these you will achieve in a twinkle of an eye when you get initiated into the great Illuminati Empire. Once you are initiated in the Illuminati Empire, you will get numerous benefits and rewards. And then there was a more threatening part of the email.
Seriously?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Some people have way too much time on their hands, man. This was just a spammed email of some kind. So I don't know what, there was no money, no identity. I don't know. I didn't respond to it, obviously. But I'm thinking, wow, the Illuminati invites Wayne Jacobson into its fold. You've got to know how real this sucker is.
Well, did you have a sense of accomplishment? Did you feel like you'd made it?
Nah, not the first reaction I had to it. I thought, actually, Sarah and I are becoming friends with someone whose last name is Rothschilds. So, you know, maybe the connection comes from there. Maybe she was sent into our life to salt the ground, to soften up the possibility, and then try and get me sucked into the Illuminati so I can be in charge of the world and make decisions for people and do all kinds of wonderful things because I'm powerful and nasty and I can control Hillary Clinton or anyway. It was fun to dream about, but just for a moment.
I was going to say, maybe it wasn't a spam. Maybe that was a specific email to you directly.
You know, I have my name on it. Yeah, maybe it was sent just to me personally. Then you know what, man? They're going to come and do you in, take your firstborn something if you don't jump in. I don't know how threatening this is going to be, but keep my eye on it. Keep my eye on the driveway. Okay. See if anybody's coming. I don't know. How are you doing?
Currently, now I'm concerned about my well-being and my family's well-being because now I know that the Illuminati is a thing, and now you've just made me aware of it, and so I don't know if I'm liable, if they're going to come and find me in Wyoming. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, they said I couldn't share this with anyone, so we'll just keep it between us. How's that?
Okay, sounds good. So we probably want to bleep all of this out of the podcast then.
We'll see.
Other than that, how am I doing? Honestly, today is a bittersweet day. We've got a rescue that's been a part of our family for 4 years, and he's an amazing dog. Probably one of the most empathetic dogs I've ever had the privilege of owning. And he has a degenerative vertebrae in his neck, and it's causing his spinal system to shut down and losing control of his back legs and some of his bodily functions. And so today was the day that Jess decided that he needed to be put down, that it was his time. And so we have it scheduled for 4:00 this afternoon. The vet's going to come to our house and we're going to do that. And so it's weird.
Those days are so hard.
I don't even know how to tell Elle. Like we have our 2-year-old, and this is the dog that literally, and we'll see if I can make it through without crying. He would go in every day when he could still walk up the stairs. He would go upstairs and check in on Elle every single day when she first came home. Like he would do his rounds in the house and make sure everybody was safe. And he would check in on Elle, and by checking in, he would just go and like touch his nose to her forehead just to check in, make sure she was okay. And as long as she moved and kind of giggled, then he would keep moving and he would do his rounds in the house. I mean, just such a sweetheart. And yet, you know, seeing him struggle, he can't go upstairs at all anymore. He, you know, just is not able to be himself anymore. But still loves our family. Like I just went in today and gave him some pets, and he threw his paw over my arm like he normally does. And it's just like, Lord, I know he's not doing well, but he still loves being a part of our family. And so it's just, I don't know. How do you tell a 2-year-old that her dog is about is not going to be coming back. I don't know.
Well, I don't know that you'd quite do it that way, but or maybe do it even, no, that's, even in advance. No. But it is the way our children begin to explore what death is. And it's not a bad thing. We'd like to protect it. Everything goes on forever, but it'll be grandmas and grandpas. It'll be, you know, she'll be comfortable with death with our grandkids and our kids. When we had pups that reached the end of their journey, that was all part of just taking the family into it. You know, the dog's time is up, and, you know, we didn't try to lie to them about, you know, going to doggy heaven, though Sarah believes in doggy heaven with all of her heart. But we just told them that, you know, everything has its season. And when she gets older in Disney movies, there's always somebody dying in a Disney movie. So that's helps.
Very true.
There's more death in Disney princess movies than in. Imagine how many people they're killing. But anyway, I'm sorry for your day. Sorry for your family. I'll keep you in my heart today. It's a tough one.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been such an interesting day because I started out this morning feeling like one of the Israelites looking back at Egypt and seriously considering whether or not I wanted to go back to Egypt or not today.
What would bring that on? What's Egypt to you that you would go back to?
Egypt to me is a professional counseling gig with benefits. And just the fear of, as God has continued to invite Jess and I into this journey of faith and walking with him and allowing him to guide us in the day to day, it's been so good. And he's continued to confirm it. Like I literally feel like I'm the Israelite that is seeing the pillar of fire at night and the cloud of smoke during the day. And then all of a sudden, like looking back over my shoulder and still feeling that pull. And I mean, how long, like, I know it never goes away, but when in your journey, when you were walking through it, did you start to recognize that you don't look over your shoulder to some of those things that you previously placed hope in? How long did it take for God to win you into a deeper level of trust to where you weren't looking over your shoulder as much?
Well, we came at this kind of different, right? I got thrown out. I didn't have to make a choice to move out.
Right? That's fair.
I got thrown out, and then I got invited to a different journey of not fighting to get back what I probably could have gotten back by a fight. And but what I would have gotten back would have been severely damaged. You can't go through a war and not. You might keep the benefits and may keep the whatever, but if the income's not there, if a lot of people have left to do something else, you're just never sure how it's going to sort out. But for me, I feel like that. You know, standing on the edge of a cliff, like whether you're going to jump off into that nice pool of water down there or not. And I didn't have to choose. Somebody came behind me and pushed me. So I'm flying through the air screaming, knowing, okay, now I'm going to sink or swim. And so it was different for me. But the lust, which is maybe not the best word, but the lust for security is a huge one. Particularly in our century. Word. Yeah. It's, man, this is predictable. This is uncertain. It's no wonder that we'd gravitate toward the certain, which is exactly what Israel's doing. I don't know if they just forgot they were slaves back there. You know, their life wasn't great in Egypt, but they still seem to go, you know, at least we had meals. And not that they didn't have meals. They had meals every day. God was dumping it on the ground 6 days a week, you know, served at your front door. Just walk out and pick up breakfast and lunch and dinner. But it was something they didn't control, right? Yeah. And so, you know, when you feel like I'm controlling this, I'm working, I'm getting paid, I'm getting whatever, but all that, as I've learned down the journey, is it's illusionary. You really don't have control of anything. And even if you take this secure job, something could happen 2 weeks from now and you get fired, laid off, some lie about you. Nothing is certain.
Yeah.
And so the only certainty that I've become comfortable with is the certainty of going, okay, I think this is where Jesus is leading me. So I'm going to go down that road. And even if I'm wrong, he has still a way to provide for us. It's not like, I think part of the temptation was I've got to get it right all the time. And no, I don't. I can make mistakes. I have made mistakes. And God just gently, he just keeps nudging along the way he wants to do and care and provide. And Man, I wouldn't trade anything now. I look at security, particularly on the world's terms, as like a prison. It is like Egypt in all of its slavery, making bricks from without straw. It's all of that. And so, no, I have no temptation to go back now. But how long did it take? That's a great question. Because I don't feel like I had a choice in it. I feel like I got thrown into it. I was unsettled in my heart a good, I would say, 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
Of feeling unsettled about God's provision. And I'll tell you how I came at it. Mostly it was feeling irresponsible.
Yeah.
It was like.
Tell me more about that. Fill me in on that.
I grew up, I'm the son of a grazing farmer. You know, we had a vineyard. We dried it into raisins, and don't work, you don't eat. Man, that was the same work ethic you probably came from, that whole Puritan work ethic. And you've got to live your life to make choices that are certain
and responsible. Yeah.
And I remember for me, it was. I had a friend here from Australia, Kevin Smith, who's passed away since, but he was here and I was sharing it with him. I was saying, you know, every day I wake up feeling like and I feel irresponsible. And his phrase was always, never irresponsible when you're following the Father. Great line.
Yeah.
But then he looked at me and he said, so when did you tell God you wouldn't live by faith? And I remembered the moment. There was a moment I actually said to God, I will not live by faith. And I was watching my parents. I was probably 13, 14, watching them deal with a friend who was trying to raise money for some mission thing that my parents weren't excited about it, but felt like, you know, what are we going to do? And so they went ahead and said, yeah, let's write them a check and give them. And I remember sitting there at the counter doing my homework and I said, I will never, because that's what we called living by faith, which was actually begging.
Yep.
And Kevin said, well, you know, you said you wouldn't live by faith. So now you've got this transaction with God that you're in conflict with.
Yeah.
And so we just had a time of prayer where I renounced that statement, saying what I really meant was I wouldn't live by begging off people, and I still don't. But if you want me to live by faith, I will. And from that prayer time, that little transaction we did with God, the three of us, God and I and Kevin, I've had moments when things have gotten really tight and kind of scary, but it's always been, let's see what God has next. Let's see what God has next. It took 3 to 5 years, but it took a moment. It took a transaction. There was something in the way. Hmm. And I think there often is with us, and we don't transact well with God. You know, we kind of just, we have this stuff and we just keep carrying it and we keep living in opposition to it. We never sit down to say, God, what are you saying about this? And what are you asking from me so that I can enter into the freedom of that?
Yeah.
And maybe that'd be helpful.
Oh, that's good. I think about me and like looking back at my version of Egypt, and it's like, I don't enjoy it. I don't like it. Like, it's not that I enjoy that life. I mean, there are things in it that I enjoy. There are things like some of the people that I get to meet and the people I get to serve, that part of it I enjoy. But it's familiar, right? Like, at least I know how to operate in that. I'm not thriving. I'm not living, but at least I know how to operate there, I guess. You know, it just is so intriguing because it was one of those humbling days where I was feeling like that going into a session with a client. And then I had a conversation with a friend of mine that I've been doing some life coaching stuff with, and it was just a really rich conversation. We did a marketing push this last week and had some really strong confirmation that came up in that. And then literally I bumped into a friend that I knew from 2016, 2017. And he and I were just chatting and I saw him and he was with another gentleman that kind of looked familiar. And I was like, okay, I think I might know who that is. And so I walk over just to say hi to him, and he introduces him, and he's the chief of police. And I was like, oh, that's why I know him. And anyway, we were just talking, and basically he made an offer for me to come and do some training with their mentors. They're doing a new youth at-risk youth program and trying to do some intervention stuff to where they're not sending young people straight into the legal system, where they're going straight to jail, they're going straight to juvie, they're getting these stuff on their records, that kind of thing. And he's like, but I really need somebody that can really help train the mentors on how to just be with young people. And I just, like, literally, I was just like, trying not to like start cracking up in front of the chief of police and be like, okay, Lord, touche. Like, how many more times are you going to continue to do this? Where it's just that, you know, that continuing to win my heart over into the trust of, no, Kyle, like, yes, I get that you find Egypt familiar, and I get that it takes a while to work that out of your system, but I love you too much to have you continue to lean on Egypt in comparison to the life that I want to offer you and that I want to live. I want you and your wife to be living in. And yeah, it was a very interesting day today. So far.
I love the way that God does that, because it's kind of, well, there's two roads, right? There's this road of trust and follow. And there's this road of Wayne making provision for Wayne doing what's responsible for Wayne sorting out. And I mean, in everything, it's not just vocational stuff. It's down to relationship crises in your life or people giving you whatever you're going through with a neighbor. There's always a road that here's what it means to follow the master down this road. And here's what it means to do what I can do to protect myself. And particularly when that old amygdala kicks in and we're going to, fix something. The challenge is here. I'm left to my own devices. I think that's what we feel like so much because we haven't learned to recognize. I was talking to someone last week who I just, in response to our last podcast, I really offered to do some coaching for someone that I mean, God gave us a heart connection and feel like there's a real important part of us doing it. And in the course of the conversation, which was a Zoom chat, she said something about, I don't know why. I just don't want to, go have time with Jesus. I know I should. I should, but I never feel like it. And then we got talking about something. And in the very midst of our talking about something that happened that morning, she had that kind of moment where not the chief of police, but something as graphic as that happened that invited her down a different road. And the road was not, I got to go spend time with God. The thing God was showing her is I'm already here to spend time with you. It's not you coming to me. It's I'm here with you. And it was just a delightful, she missed it. She kind of blew right through it and she caught a piece of it, but she missed the real invitation. Instead of the shame of I'm not doing enough to be with God, God was saying, I'm right here. And there's a way for you to delight in me, going back to the previous podcast about pleasure, which is what started the whole thing about her wanting to connect more with me, saying, I've never learned to live in God's pleasure. I don't know what that means. Yeah. So maybe you could help me explore that, because we were already on something in prayer together, her and her husband and I, about something going on in their life. So this was just an add-on to that, and I'm going, yeah. So I'm actually living out these stupid podcasts right away, the whole idea of helping people. And that's been life-giving to me, that whole pleasing God. Those scriptures where Paul talks about we live a life pleasing to God. Those are the ones that like, oh crud, I know we've got to be pleasing to God. Instead of be pleasing to God, the pleasure of God. I love how that has changed. I love in that conversation with her right in that moment, there were four things like God did in that moment that she was missing the full import of. And I got to be there and put a finger on it. Just go, hey, let's go back to that. Oh, it's lovely. Yeah. I loved it. But I think that's true. That's why I'd love people to kind of sort out. There's always, no matter what in life we're dealing with, and it can be a circumstance with a person. It can be just, what am I doing with my free time? It can be anything. There's a path of control and illusion and trying to hold on to something and control it. And there's a path of trust. There's that.
Yeah.
What is the Father doing and how is he inviting me into it? And if we stopped, and I mean like for a week or two, if we need to stop to say, okay, what am I trying to do to control this? That probably is not going to work. That's what we never see. Yeah. We think, man, our control will work. I can fix this. But if I'm assuming, okay, that doesn't work, what am I being nudged towards? Where's that little wink from Jesus inviting me not into this horrible thing I have to do for him, but this little wink that says, hey, come this way. I've got a little surprise for you. And it's like that. It's like, well, my grandkids are here over the weekend, which we got to have them for an evening this weekend, which is fun because they're older. They don't always love grandma and grandpa's house as much as all their activities are involved in. So we got them. And it's always kind of like, okay, what little fun things can we do? Because let's have fun together. Because that's what all we want to do with my grandkids, have fun with them.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I love this. This is the point where life-changing decisions are made. And they're not made at some big juncture up the road. Like, we're always looking for some crisis and some... It's really right now in this moment. Am I going to lean into the reality that is God? Yeah. Or am I going to save myself? Am I going to do what I think is best? With all my wisdom, Bible verses, everything I've got, I'm gonna do what's best and what's right. And then we don't even know what that is until God nudges us. So I love that God, I love on the same time frame that you're wrestling with some, and this is, you know, contract time of the year in terms of making decisions about next year for you. I get it. I get all that. I've been through it with you for the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And the choice to say, yeah, but I feel like God's inviting me to something different, but it seems so irresponsible. I don't know if it's going to work. And then God drops you in a conversation that could actually provide some income and whatever, living more free range. And I just go, God, you are amazing. You are amazing at what you do. And that's what you want to look for, is those little kind of things. So it's not just I'm pursuing some dream inside that's never going to happen because just Wayne's dream. But it's God's idea, and God drops little breadcrumbs, if you want to use it, little breadcrumbs to say, even if this job or contract or whatever doesn't work out,
yeah,
it's like God saying, I got options. Relax, absolutely. I've got this. Instead of, no, we got to try and make it happen.
Well, and the funny part is, we're talking a friendship that I developed 5-6 years ago. I haven't seen Chuck in 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, and so just to be able to encounter that. And there, that's the beauty of it is that it drew my heart back into Kyle, like, come and just delight with me today. Cause I could have never manufactured that encounter if I ever even tried. Like, I mean, there's no way I could have done that or even laid the foundation, you know, the relational foundation where this person, where my friend was like, oh yeah, this is who Kyle is, blah, blah, blah. This is what he does. And, you know, that wasn't ever my intention with that friendship. I never knew, you know, and it was just, God is such a beautiful multitasker without me ever even seeing it. Right. He brings strings of relationship and life and joy together in ways that I couldn't even begin to imagine. And it's moving in areas that I couldn't imagine or arrange for or try to make happen or manufacture.
Yeah, but there is a piece that I love about this. You went to this coffee shop. Why?
I was meeting with a client.
Okay, so you meet with a client. So you see somebody you kind of might recognize, not sure who it is. You have a decision, right, as to whether I'm going to go do that, or I'm going to say I'm going to get this appointment out of the way, and I'm going to rush home and do this because my dog's dying today. Blah 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 blah. You can stay in that world, but you had enough space in your life to go, huh, that guy looks kind of familiar. Maybe I'll go over, and then not just go over and say hi, oh yeah, but sit down and have a chat.
Yeah.
If those things don't happen, you don't discover what that might have been for, right?
Oh, that's so true. And that's exactly right. Like, I did have the space. I wasn't rushed for time. I was able to just sit there, and literally the chief of police at one point apologized, and he's like, I'm sorry to be co-opting your time. And I was like, no, this is wonderful. Like, there's no apology necessary, because I had the flexibility built in, and I had that space to just be able to follow that nudge and give that nudge time and say, okay, cool. I wonder where this is going to go.
And how many of us have that in our life? I mean, we joke about how much we live to the margins. People rush in, rush out. If they're going in there, meet a client, get it done, get back, do this, do that. That's how I live most of my life.
Yeah.
And I love that God's invited me to more spacious places where you're just more relaxed. You're just not living at the margins. I got an email from a guy named Nigel. He writes me now and again things. He wrote me about 5-6 podcasts that just, he said this about the one last week. When you talked about the scandal of particularity, I immediately thought of the parable of the Good Samaritan. It was the story of someone who lived exactly this because, after all, our neighbor is the particularity that is right in front of us. The priest and the Levite clearly did not see this, as they were involved in a large ministry which demanded their attention. He takes a bit of a shot there, but I love that. I love the particularity of going into there a little more relaxed, able to see what God's doing. And I think that's a real key to how God makes himself known. We want the blinding lights and lightning bolt and somebody glowing in the dark, or, you know, and it really, God just in subtle ways put stuff around us. And if we pursue it, we see stuff. And if we don't pursue it, that's when people say, gosh, I don't, God's not saying anything to me. I'm going to see. No, there's little stuff, all breadcrumbs all around you. You're just missing it. And that's normal. We tend to, you know, ignore enough that we get more calloused and desensitized to those moments. But it's also in our purview to say, okay, Jesus, I don't want to miss this stuff. Would you make my heart sensitive? Would you teach me love, rest, and play so I can? I mean, so much that we've been talking about the last year and a half that comes right into this space. If I'm at love, at rest, and at play, I'm not going to miss the chance to sit down with the chief of police of Torrington and see what God wanted to drop in my life as an encouragement, potentially a contract up the road. And you just, if you live at breakneck speed, and with angst in your heart and with the amygdala on fire, he wrote me about the amygdala too, which I thought was hilarious. same letter. He said, I remember a study on Proverbs where the teacher said that the meaning of wisdom, this is your word, you used about what? Holy indifference, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. He said that the meaning of wisdom carried with it a sense of emotional detachment. In other words, when dealing with a person or a situation, it was wise to be as emotionally detached as possible, in the sense that your own worth did not depend on your decision or reaction. Mm-hmm. This once again has reminded me of the podcast that you gave a year ago when talking about which part of the brain is activated in our responses to events. For a long time, I have observed the vast majority of people seem to respond automatically to everyday challenges from the amygdala, fight or flight, right from the start. Everything is a fight or a challenge. Oh my gosh, there's such freedom. And it's not, as I read that, I know people are like, I don't live like this. I want to live like this. It really is not a, oh, I'm going to start doing this tomorrow. This is a lane you merge into, you know, because fight or flight, challenges, you know, all that angst and fear and anxiety we deal with, you're not bigger than that. You don't have the power to shut it down and say, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to live like this. You don't.
Yeah.
You do have the power to say, Jesus, I want to learn to live in the other lane. I want to learn to live love, rest, play. I want to learn to live where I'm aware of the breadcrumbs you're dropping around in my life that I'm stomping on every day because I'm missing them. The manna. We're back to Egypt and the manna. I didn't draw those two, but the breadcrumbs that God drops in our heart. God, every day, I think there's like, God puts treasure around me. Now, I would still say I miss most of it. I'm not thinking I hit most of it, but when you hit a little of it, it's so good.
It's awesome.
So good.
If somebody is, because I mean, we've touched on a ton of elements of God coaxing or nudging somebody into the other lane. Mm-hmm. So are there other things that you would say to somebody that is saying, hey, I want to actually create margins. Like as of right now, I know that I am riding literally to the edge of the print line. Like there is no space on the side of that.
Yeah. Because I'm a mom and I got kids and school and COVID and I've got a job and I've got, you know, I get this world drives us to the margins, but I think it mostly drives us to the margins by exploiting our insecurity.
Ooh, that's good.
I'm not going to be a good enough mom, not going to be a good enough worker, not going to be good enough this, not going to be enough that. So I'm driven already from the start. So how do I merge? I think we need to see that the things that make us feel overwhelmed have to do with something inside of us. As long as we can blame it on the external factors, it's COVID, it's my husband lost a job, my wife's this, that. As long as it's externalized to you, you're out of control. But and then you're trying to get Jesus to control that chaos, which I think is just bizarre. I still think that's the chaos he controls. The chaos he gets to deal with is the chaos in me. So what I get to start with is, okay, God, if I'm living in this fast lane over here and I want to merge into the slow lane, what is it I'm missing? What is it that's driving me? And those are questions. It's not, you know, you don't sit down tomorrow morning and say, okay, Jesus, what's wrong with me? And he's going to give you a list. You just start going, God, would you reveal in me what keeps me in this lane? What draws me to that lane? It's never what we think it is. It's always something else, right? because it's compensation over there. It's coping mechanism. It's all that. So what is it that you want to change in me? And then don't expect them to ever tell you. Just watch him change it. Just watch things become, you become aware of stuff. And then you become aware of a different way to respond. But the way to respond is scary. And I don't know that I want to respond that way. It's just me. But find a good friend. You can say, okay, I think maybe this is a thought I had the other day. And you go, yeah. And a friend can say, because here's where friends are often valuable in crisis. They have the emotional detachment you don't have.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, and I've got this person that I was talking to back east who's dealing with some major stuff in their lives, this couple. They really are, some major stuff. It's why my heart kind of broke for them and said, hey, let me kind of hold you in prayer about some things.
Yeah.
So I really have them in my heart. And that opens a door to the kind of conversation that slows. I mean, I'm in their life right now because I don't have the emotional attachment to the things they do.
Yeah.
So it's easier for me to recognize God's fingerprint. Lewis and I do that with each other. We get together once a week here, my friend Lewis, and when we can, and just hang out. And I tell you, every time I walk away with, whoa, there's a little circle of light around something that didn't have light on it before. And that means something I shared, and he jumped on, and I went, oh, wow, hold it a minute. Or he does the same thing. And so a good friend is helpful who's less detached. But to start with, I guess where we started this, there is a different way for you to respond to everything than you're probably responding. So don't take on everything at once. This is where believing what you hear, Jesus wants to show you something today that will make a difference in this particularity over here. And if you follow that, that creates space for something else to reveal that opens a door over here. That creates space for something else. So it really is a journey. It's just,
yeah.
I think of Stefan's trail where he's looking at that carnival in the city and thinking, man, that's what everything I've ever wanted to be is in there. And God's saying, go down this little road over here, this little trail in the trees right here. This is the path of love. And this and that, I know now Stefan would say, wouldn't go to the carnival for all the money in the world today. Down that path and down to the pool of love and being able to soak in the reality of God's love and how it's shaping his touch with people and his life in the world. It's incredible. Who wouldn't want that? So that's what I would say. I would say, realize this is Jesus's work to get you in the slow lane, in the spacious lane. Let me say that rather than slow lane. In the spacious lane. It's Jesus' task. And so as a follower, I'm just saying, shepherd, show me. Shepherd, show me. And then look for it to come in little bits of wisdom, little nudges, little insights, little opportunities that just you kind of see during the day and you kind of realize, I think I've been missing some of that before. And yeah, you probably have because we all do.
And yeah, isn't that the good news, right? Like it wasn't that they were screaming a get out of hell free card. That wasn't what they were screaming. They were talking about, this is the life that Jesus and the Father are inviting you to live. Yes. This is what he's wanting for you in the relationship life. And I think even just the encouragement of the fact that you're asking that question is already a hallmark of the life and the kingdom of Christ working in your life. Because you're actually asking the question. Like before, even 9 months before, you may not have even been thinking about that question or even considering the margins because that was just the norm. That's the way that you were doing life. That's the way you had to do life.
Yeah, when you're in survival mode of just, you know, fear, fight, or flight, or freeze, or whatever all those things are, it will wear you out. And then you, I can't find that other spacious lane. I can't find it. No, you can't find it. But Jesus knows where it is. He knows how to invite you into it. This is a guy who's living in it. This is Nigel again. I had these four things, but they've all come out in a different way than I was going to do it. But Nigel wrote this, living from the heart is so much more restful and playful. In my job working in a shop, and I don't know what kind of shop, he said, I will wish customers a lovely day. And they frequently respond, you too, when you get home. And I reply, I'm having it now. I get paid to play shop. Now, there's a guy who's living in the spaciousness, not of, gotta go to work, put my 8 hours in. Then I go home and try and have some fun before I go to bed at night, get up in the morning. He's playing shop. He's playing. Yeah. What would it be to play at your job? And I mean, don't do your job less well. What would it be to play at your job instead of endure your job? And if that intrigues you, ask Jesus about it. I know that sounds like such a cop-out, but it's not. I don't have the power to get you there. You don't have the power to get you there. And then he said this one, which I thought was great flip on this whole pleasure thing. Last week, the podcast about living to pleasure reminded me of a song that was popular with the congregation we were in, which contained the phrase, "Break my heart for what breaks yours." My wife and I commented at the time that this was always sung with a sense of guilt-driven angst. I remember singing songs like that. Break my heart for what breaks yours. No, God, we just did it. And he said this way, he said, "Your podcast has made me want to sing a new song with the line, 'Make my heart whole for what makes your heart whole.'"
Ooh.
Isn't that a better prayer?
Ooh, that's, oh man, I got chills. Yeah. Well,
that's the flip of the whole religious kind of way of thinking, which is pleasing to God and break my heart for what breaks yours. And it sounds so holy, so spiritual. Yes. We're pouring our lives out as an offering to this horrible God who wants to ruin everything about our lives instead of, "Oh, make my heart whole for what your heart is whole for," which to me is make my pleasure be inside your pleasure. And I want to live to that reality. And I'm telling you, I've gotten those last couple podcasts, more email, phone connection, conversations about people that are going, "This is a life I don't know. And I want to know this. I want to learn to live in God's, in the Father's pleasure, not pleasing to Father," which if that's the only way you can buy into it, that's better than pleasing you. But it'd be better if that was all pleasure in who God is, and sing a song, "Make my heart whole." If we start just praying some of those things, and I mean, not the prayer requests and morning devotional time, but I mean, just while we're driving around or whatever, "God, just make my heart whole for what makes you whole. God, show me the way here to live through this instead of trying to do it my own way and pull me back into my own whatever."
Well, and that was like this morning, just the encounters that I was having. When I say humbling, it was a playful humbling. I didn't feel dejected. I didn't feel shamed. I didn't feel down. It was like, it was like this internal chuckle of like, "Okay, touche, Lord. Yep. you got me again." You know, like, and it wasn't a bad thing. It was like, it was just kind of this, "Okay, yep, you're absolutely right. And I'm going to laugh about this with you," because it was very playful. And it was almost like this over-exaggerated wink of, because there was two different things within just a few minutes of one another that were just like blatant from the Lord. It's like, okay, like, all right, that's fine, Father. Like, you want to show off? That's perfect. I love it.
I love it too. And I love it that you weren't, you know, in your prayer closet, knees in your, you know, hands in your face and knees on, begging God for wisdom, and God showed you something. It was just living with your eyes a little more wide open and being a little more spacious. This thing, this is my best thing I heard this week, which fits in right here, actually. This is from Mark Golley in the Golley Report, something I get every Friday, talking about the elusive God, which I love that. It doesn't go to God's intention, because God's not elusive in the sense of, "I'm trying to hide from you."
Yeah.
But our perception of God makes him seem elusive, and he's not. But he said this, "More often than not, when you catch a glimpse of divine reality, it's usually because you're seeing something in the corner of your mind. Naturally, if you turn to stare at it directly, it will disappear. Yet you are left with an insight, a perception, a feeling that you've encountered reality with a capital R in a new and deeper way." There's actually a thing in astronomy. When you try to look at stars and things with your naked eye, when you look right at it, you can't see it. It's if you look just to the side of it, your peripheral vision picks it up more clearly than your direct vision. And I find that's true of just what we're talking about all day today. That's true of God. The times you're seeking him, trying to get a word from God, and try not usually there, because we're all up inside our own head. I don't think it's God saying, I'm not doing that. I'm going to be more sneaky. I don't think it's that. I think it's that when we're up in our own head, we miss the way he communicates with us. Yeah. And when we're just living with a little wider peripheral vision, and you recognize that seems like a familiar face, I may go back there I feel like I maybe had something over there. I'm going to go have that conversation, or then stuff happens. Because it's I love that maybe we see into his reality better with our peripheral vision than we do staring him down, hoping that we'll come up with something. And then mostly, I think we end up making that stuff up. You know, I'm going to get a word from God. And the word we get, I remember in a car ride with my brother a long time ago where I'd been on a fast because I felt like our time was over, Sarah and I, where we'd been in ministry and that God had something new for us. And this was like in July. And I remember my brother saying, well, he knew I'd been fasting. And he said, something about, so God showing you anything? I said, yeah, March 9th. And I said it out loud before. I didn't even know what that was. I didn't hear it anywhere else. I just go, what? I think he's going to open the door March 9th. And I'm just there turning to me going, you didn't tell me this. I said, I didn't tell me this till now. I don't know how that popped out. It popped out without a conscious thought in my mind. But March 9th, a door opened that we went through. And that was not 8 months later. But every time I get kind of like, well, we got to figure out what we're doing next. And and I'm praying at the end. Nothing. And then I just go, March 9th. March 9th. I'm just going to wait around till March 9th. Waiting around till March 9th. Yeah. And I was on a flight actually with Sarah, and I got a phone call right before I was leaving, and somebody asked me to do something. It opened a pretty big door to life and the way God has led us ever since. So God is nuts.
He is.
In a lovely sort of way. God's very playful. God pleasures in what he does. So I want you to come pleasure with me. And that way, maybe we listen better. We get out of our own insecurities and our own responsibilities and that religious kind of be pleasing to God instead of come live in the pleasure of the divine.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.